I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Iris Simpson Bush. Iris is the executive director of the Flying Pig Marathon. And Iris, it's right around the corner, the Flying Pig. How many people do you expect this year?
Well, this year, based on registration's current pace, we're estimating about 32,000.
How many years has it been?
This will be our 14th running. We've had growth every year. The first year in 99, we had hoped for 3,000 participants. We debuted with 6,000. So it has, I guess, exceeded expectations each year. But we get participants from all 50 states. And so far, 10 foreign countries are represented.
Why do you think it's grown so much?
We debuted at a time when thematic marathons were unique. We stumbled upon a brand that was just that, very brandable. I think that we were wise in that we took the race, the event, very seriously. In that first year, Runner's World said we were a textbook case on how to present a marathon. So that aspect, operationally, we try to cover absolutely everything. And yet, at the same time, we don't take ourselves so seriously. So we say we put the fun in the run.
It is fun. And it's something that I think people can do pretty much at any age, as long as they continue to stay in shape and work at it.
Absolutely. Again, we do try to make sure that we take care, anticipate, and plan for when you cross the start until you get to the finish. It's kind of a grassroots effort that has built really all over the country. People say, if you want to have a fun time, you want to go someplace where you're welcomed as a newbie, the Flying Pig is the place to be.
Yeah, it seems to be very runner-oriented and not concentrated just on the, you know, the top 50 runners or whatever. It's for everyone, it seems.
And it's like a holiday in this city. The whole city gets into it, and you really start focusing on the youth as well.
And you know, Crystal, that does feel like, well, a holiday for us, of course. We plan 51 weeks for that 1 week, but it does so much for our community. Our economic impact studies are showing that it's delivering over $12 million annually for the local economy. We talked about the growth. A few years back, we got serious about our youth program. We have a wonderful program director, Robin Pendry, who has a passion for it. She's really been involved since the beginning. That program has built through the years. We now have over 6,000 children doing an incremental program. They run or walk 25 miles the months leading up to the event. We give them a hog log. They journalize their miles, their nutrition. The library has partnered with us. It has a reading component. They bring their hog logs down and they do their 26 mile under the same finish the marathoners use. In fact, Running USA, kind of the industry organization, named us Youth Program of the Year last year.
That is amazing. And, you know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't give credit here to Bob Coughlin, who normally is here with us this time of year talking about the Flying Pig and the fact that it was him, almost single-handedly, who actually got this thing off the ground.
Crystal, absolutely. In fact, in those days, I was the general sales manager at WCPO. I read that somebody was trying to bring a marathon to Cincinnati. I thought it would be great for the city and that the station should get involved. His vision and his attention to the foundation, they laid the groundwork in those early days.
Iris, we are out of time. We're going to continue the conversation tomorrow because I want to talk about the other wonderful thing that this race does, providing to so many charities. If people want information, what's the website?
FlyingPigMarathon.com.
Iris Simpson Bush, thank you for being our guest. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Iris Bush. Iris is the executive director of the Flying Pig Marathon. And Iris, it's coming up quickly. And you know, one thing, everybody knows about what a great race it is and how much fun it is, but not everyone realizes how much gets contributed to charity as a result of that race.
You're right, Tom. We hear that a lot. The Flying Pig Marathon is a not-for-profit ourselves. We're a 501c3. Our mission was to put on a premier event to raise money for our charities and celebrate community. I think on the first and third mention, we're doing pretty well. It's that raising money for charities that is our true mission and our passion. This year, we will have over 200 charities represented, the major causes and organizations, American Heart, Cancer Society. It just runs the gamut. But it goes all the way down to some very small organizations. We even have Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops participating. The beauty of this structure and the model that the founders laid out is that all of the pledge dollars, all of the money they raise in association with the Flying Pig, they keep 100%. And so this year, it looks as though we're on track to exceed $1 million. It's the 14th running, and over $11 million has been raised for local charities.
You mentioned 32,000 runners participating this year, hopefully. And this, there's also something new this year as it relates to fundraising opportunities for nonprofits called the Piggest Raffle Ever. Piggest with a P.
Of course. Again, everything we do with a pun. But the Piggest Raffle was designed, again, as a fundraiser for our charities. Our board of directors is wonderful. They allow us to cover all of the administrative costs. The Piggest Raffle Ever, there are three prizes. You can win a 2-year lease of a Toyota Prius as the first prize. Second prize is priceless, a behind-the-scenes, all-expense-paid trip to the Boston Marathon. And they've assured us that they will treat our participants as very important pigs. And then the third prize is a Cincinnati experience, downtown hotel stay, restaurant, gift certificates, some tickets, that sort of thing. But the beauty of it, again, is the pigs are $5. They will fly race weekend. We have a big drop on Fountain Square. Every dollar the charity sells, that $5 goes directly to their cause.
But if you don't run, can you still get involved in the festivities?
On so many levels. Volunteers, we have over 5,000 grunts. We affectionately refer to our volunteers as grunts. You can spectate. We call you our squealers. Or, again, you can donate to any of the participating charities of your choice. We feel that there's something for everyone. The community has really embraced this event. Runners who come from all across the country say one of the reasons they come is because they hear that the city, the residents support the Flying Pig, and they have so much fun when they're here.
So it's pretty neat from a spectator standpoint as well.
And there's a lot going on out there, things we don't even know about. We see pictures and think, wow, they're having a great time.
But, you know, it's really something that I think as a community, as a city, we should be proud of. Not only the fact that we've created, or people like you and Bob Coughlin and others have really created this wonderful event that affects and impacts so many people, but it raises the level of our city in the eyes of others around the country and around the world.
We get so much positive feedback afterwards. They had a great time, and many say, gosh, what a pleasant surprise, Cincinnati, Ohio.
If people want information about the Flying Pig,
flyingpigmarathon.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, this time of year, we often hear from several people about getting notices from the IRS. They may have gone back through their tax return that they tried to complete in a rush, found a mistake. They don't know when they should be filing an amended return, or do they wait for the IRS to contact them and tell them about the mistake?
Well, and sometimes it's not a mistake in the sense that they did something wrong when they filed their return, but maybe they're a partner in a partnership, or they have an investment that pays dividends, and whoever pays the dividends or does the partnership return corrected their information, sent you new information that's inconsistent with what you had in the past, so that your original return doesn't have the right information. And then you have to consider whether you should file an amended return for that.
The key here is that there are certain things that you do have to file an amended return for. There are others that you don't. For example, if you've made a math mistake, or if you've just left a form out, the IRS will contact you. They will send you a notice and let you know of the mistake. The key here is make sure before you just write them a check that you take a look to make sure they're correct. It's not unusual that even the IRS makes a mistake.
Often the IRS will match information reported by third parties to your tax return. For instance, dividends and interest and even your mortgage interest deduction get matched to the 1099 and 1098 forms.
And you know, one thing that we've seen a couple of times here recently is if you are a participant in an HSA, a health savings account, or if you have taken money out for your child's qualifying higher educational expenses and you've received a 1099-Q reporting those distributions, if you don't include documentation in your tax return to show that you've used those items or that money for qualifying expenses, the IRS is just going to assume you didn't, and they'll send you a notice. business, and they're going to ask you to pay the tax on those distributions. The key is don't send them a check. Make sure you respond to the letter, respond to the notice, but you don't owe tax if you use those distributions for qualifying medical or educational expenses.
And typically, that's not a reason to amend a return if you neglected to report that information, because you'll probably get a notice anyway.
But there are certain situations where you should file an amended return. For example, if you left off income, if you left income out of your tax return, if you failed to include monies from a 1099 or a K-1, that's certainly something that you should amend your tax return for.
One and even better reason is if you neglected to include a deduction, right? Because then you'll file an amended
tax
return
credit
and get a refund, hopefully.
If you've used the wrong filing status, say that you claimed single or head of household and you did that incorrectly, you need to make sure that you've got the right filing status, and you should, in fact, file a corrected and amended tax return.
And sometimes people with college age or young adult children claim their children as dependents, and then the children file their tax return and claim themselves. And you can't both claim the same person as a dependent. So one of you, in that case, has to file an amended return, or the IRS will reject both returns.
And if you do have to file an amended return as an individual, you do that on 1040X. You can get that form at the IRS website at www.irs.gov. If you filed an incorrect business return and you're a C corporation, you file an amended return on form 1120X.
And normally you have up to 3 years from the original filing date or the extended original date to file an amended return. So you can generally file as many as 3 years worth of amended returns.
One point that's very important to realize is the IRS never contacts you through email. So if you do get an email that says it's from the IRS, it is not. Make sure that you don't open those, you don't respond to those. But if you get a notification through the mail, that's certainly time to take action. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Eric Avner. Eric is the Vice President of the Hale U.S. Bank Foundation. And Eric is also joined today by Eddie Sciomi. Eddie is the Vice President of Programs for Venture for America. And Eric, you sent me an email about a week ago, and you said, I've got this great organization that we want to introduce to Cincinnati. Is there any way we can get on the radio and talk about it? Eddie, maybe you can share what Venture for America is all about and why it is so important.
So Venture for America is a new program that is the inspiration of a gentleman named Andrew Yang. He's a serial entrepreneur in New York and more recently sold his company, which was called Manhattan GMAT. It was a test prep company for GMAT, for business school. What he discovered in his startup career, he noticed that it was very hard for startups to attract or even reach, just because of sheer capacity reasons, reach high potential youth in college campuses. They just didn't have the capacity to recruit. Through Manhattan GMAT, he was privy to these young, talented youth, and he discovered that they really wanted to work for startup companies, but they didn't know where to find them. Seeing this gap, he founded Venture for America, which was designed to really bridge this pipeline. More relevant to Cincinnati is we're trying to place young folks, high potential youth from top universities in startup companies in the non-traditional areas mm-hmm. of the country. Most folks run to Silicon Valley or maybe to New York. We are placing these youth in startup companies in cities like Cincinnati, Detroit, New Orleans. There's a economic development angle to this as well. We think high potential youth could easily work in startup companies. There's no reason they can't do it in smaller cities.
So your goal really is sort of an economic development hinging upon startup companies and getting them to have better talent earlier on.
That's a big angle for us. We are trying to redesign the pipeline in which young folks are deployed in their first job after school.
I think it's wonderful that young people are going to startups. The whole innovation, the whole smart young people helping our startups grow is just a win-win all the way around.
We love the idea of young folks being utilized in functions that will be pro-country, pro-economy. They're going to be deployed in these massive organizations that are going to be fighting for turf and market share. And the specific skill sets that they're going to have are different than individuals who want to start companies. So we'd love for them to specifically learn the skills directly from the chefs, if you will,
absolutely,
that are creating these jobs, these startup companies.
Eric, why is it something that the U.S. Hale Bank Foundation is interested in?
Part of our investments are around in entrepreneurship. We do some investments in placemaking and some talent. So this was an area that we've been always looking at about how do we increase the pipeline of talent, how do we attract attract talent to Cincinnati? How do we retain talent? And to think about how can we be more competitive in that realm? And so when we were hearing about this notion of, well, you could take the best students from around the country and it started attracting them and making Cincinnati one of those places that they could make a living or they could actually contribute to the community.
We are out of time today, gentlemen. We're going to continue our conversation tomorrow around this whole rebirth and renaissance of entrepreneurship here on BusinessWise. If people would like information, what's the contact information for Venture for America?
Well, our website is www.ventureforamerica, no space, all one word, venture for spelled out, america.org, not com. And you can email me directly at Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, at ventureforamerica.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guests are Eric Avner. Eric is the vice president of the Hill U.S. Bank Foundation. And Eddie Sciomi. Eddie is the vice president of programs for Venture for America. Eddie, we've talked a little bit about this program. You want to get these bright students, undergraduates or graduate students, and get them to work in startups. What's the pull for the students? Why do they want to go work for a startup?
I think currently a startup is a cool thing for particularly undergrads. Just the popular culture has made it attractive through the story of Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey at Twitter and Foursquare and Pinterest. There's actually the evolution of this notion of a gap year that's developed after undergrad where folks are, you know, it used to be the Peace Corps, I guess, and then it became traveling to Thailand or whatever. Folks now see the time right after undergrad and before graduate school as a time to do some good, do something that would be riskier, you would say, or maybe off track. The startup world's hard for an undergrad to access. They don't have the ability to recruit on campus and certainly out-recruit consulting firms and financial services organizations. And so we're hoping to bridge that, making the bar a lot lower for those undergrads.
You know, it's working with a lot of privately held businesses, many of which were startups at one point or the other. There is so much opportunity for a young person to learn leadership skills, to learn so much faster than they would if they just got pigeonholed into a job at a big company. It could be amazing win-win. The startup gets bright, young talent.
Yep.
The student, the recent graduate, gets great leadership and training, work training.
I think this is a mutually beneficial partnership that has just sort of been bypassed over the years, and we're really looking to take advantage of that.
Eric, from your point of view, working with the U.S. Hale Bank Foundation, I mean, from the city's standpoint, again, you're attracting great young minds who hopefully after their 2 years or however long they're with the startup, want to stay here and make Cincinnati their home. But also, it really lifts Cincinnati up as a region where people who want to start a business can locate their business because we have a relationship with Venture for America, and they can get these bright minds to help them grow their companies.
I think both to raise the reputation of Cincinnati as a place that young people can be successful, startup community can be successful. But then also, I think you mentioned before that we want this to be a community effort in the sense that we want these kids, when they arrive here, to become part of the community. They're not just going to work for these startups. I think we really want them embedded in our community, that they're involved in neighborhoods, they're involved in politics. Anyone who moves to Cincinnati and tries to get involved in the community, we want them to be embedded so that after their 2 years in Venture for America, they wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
It also allows these young people to be innovative. They are surrounding themselves by people who are taking risks, who are innovative, and you hope some of that flows over to them and sticks.
Absolutely. So, you know, there was a time, whether real or mythology, in our country where there was a Henry Ford tinkering in the in the garage and experimenting with different things, and that was the industrial age for our country, and it really fostered this incredible entrepreneurial spirit that manifests in large amounts of wealth being accumulated through development of businesses. I think the internet age has really rekindled that within our country. We uniquely positioned as a part of the United States and the Western world to have this extraordinary ability to share information. I think it's really started a new renaissance, if you will, a new industrial age of experimentation and invention creation.
People would like information. Your website is
www.ventureforamerica.org, not com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Tony Apro. Tony is the president of the Perfection Group. And Tony, now you've been with this company for a long time. How has it been for you working in a family-owned business, a mechanical engineering business, when you're not part of the family?
It's a very rewarding experience. It's a company that's built upon loyalty and getting all the outside influence and recommendations from people to make it sustain and grow.
You know, the company, the Perfection Group, just celebrated its 60th anniversary. So congratulations to that, because so many businesses certainly don't make it for 10 years, much less six decades, especially during this economy. And what would you attribute the success of this company too?
I would give you a couple answers for that. One is the tenure of our employees. Up until we had this last influx of new hires, we've hired about 25 to 30 people in the last 2.5 to 3 years. The average tenure of an employee was ours was over 10 years. But to get to the root of the question is the really having the strategic foresight to focus on our core strengths and our core competencies.
You know, that's very interesting that you say that, because as a CPA, we come across many businesses and certainly business leaders, business owners who think they're really good at one area for whatever reason branch off. They stray from where their core competency is, and many times that gets them into trouble.
Been there, done that. And as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, we tried that. We had a little bit of a technology company that helped us. We thought we needed a technology company to help us become more in tune with what was out there today. And so we had that.
The whole dot-com era?
Yes. We actually tried to take a part of our business out west and try to dispatch our service from a call center in Henderson, Nevada. Didn't work. But it all came down to we really needed to focus on the four things we thought were important.
And what are those?
Four things where we want to grow our service base. That's the customers that we provide services to day in, day out. The second one was to really put pinpoint and focus on our green building technology. The third thing is we want to grow through acquisition in our footprint, those five states that we're in. And the fourth thing, and probably the most predominantly the biggest thing, is our development of our leadership team.
You've recently been named Large Employer of the Year. How is that in terms of making you more competitive?
Perhaps the easiest thing I can say to that is it helps us recruit and get well-qualified mm-hmm. and very, very good people. When we recruit them based upon those strategies that we know that we're successful in, and people want to work with us.
And how many employees do you have?
180.
And as I mentioned, you're in the mechanical engineering business, and certainly much of what you do, I would imagine, is with construction. How have you handled the storm during the last few years in terms of the economy?
Quite honestly, it's been going back to our roots in providing energy savings and facility services to municipal and institutional customers like government facilities and schools and municipalities.
It always seems to come back to bringing more value. Tony, we are out of time today. We're going to continue our conversation tomorrow with Tony Arpro. He's the president of the Perfection Group. If people would like more information about the Perfection Group,
just go to our website, www.perfectiongroup.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Tony Arpro. Tony is the president of the Perfection Group, and the Perfection Group is a mechanical engineering company. Tony, you have about 181 employees.
That's
correct. Five states, and you focus on the building industry, construction, and that type of thing.
Yes. We offer design-build service to what we normally refer to as construction-based customers, people building new buildings or renovating buildings. And the other half of our business is to institutional customers that need our services packaged in a financial justification.
You know, Tony, we hear so much these days about the environment and this whole phenomena of green. Do you think it's a fad, or do you think that's something that's here to stay?
I think there are phases of it that are definitely here to stay. And when we do a building analysis, there's generally five or six things that we look at, from water conservation to retro-commissioning buildings to lighting retrofits to energy retrofits to building controls. And then we look at things called renewables, things that you can do to building that make them more energy efficient by using renewable sources mm-hmm. such as solar, wind, along those lines. Most customers that we deal with are dealing within the constraints of their budget, therefore getting the value of the services that we provide for the money that they spend. In a lot of cases, what we're seeing is some of the renewable sources have long extended paybacks, such as a solar retrofit or a solar panels installed, can generally be anywhere from 15 to 25 to 30-year paybacks, which limit the customer's ability mm-hmm. to really do something like that.
And there are some credits. There are some credits available, state and federal credits that may be available on certain of those types of improvements.
Yes. There are, and there are some that are very attractive today. For instance, lighting retrofits from your local utility companies. Those are generally fairly effective and fairly efficient, and some of those are be going away here sometime later this summer in July.
Tony, I mentioned earlier that you're the president of the Perfection Group. You've been involved in the organization for how many years?
17 years.
17 years, and the actual owner is now transitioning his company, the company, to the next generation. What advice do you have for family businesses that are trying to move their company from generation to generation? Because often, that's not always successful.
Advice would be very, very simple. You know, listen to what your people are saying. The new young generation generally have fresh ideas, and they're willing to change and take risks and have a transition plan where the leadership can be transferred.
And that whole leadership development is so critical. It's just very important to make sure that you have people in place. And just because somebody has the same last name doesn't necessarily mean they are the best person to run the company.
In a lot of cases, that is correct. We're fortunate, once again, that we have great people around our organization, and we build our company around a family-based atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So it's not uncommon at all that we have several people with different last names that have sons and brothers and wives and so forth that work.
And if people would like to learn more about the Perfection Group, what's your website?
www.perfectiongroup.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Bing Spittler. Bing is a strategic business partner with Profiles International. And Bing, I know that you're very active in the HR industry. You've been very involved for years in helping businesses identify candidates, but you also help candidates learn how to make the best first impression on a job interview. What are the top two or three things that you can share with folks today so that they can make a great impression?
Well, Crystal, a candidate for employment needs to take into consideration that they need to be honest and natural in speaking with a recruiter or a manager for a position. It's important that the candidate relate what they've done, and what they've done relates to what the job's going to be. Few candidates really do that. An individual may have been president of a fraternity, for example, or she may have been a president of a sorority. That's all good news. But really what the employer is looking for is, well, how do you translate that experience, that leadership experience, that take charge experience that you have into the job that you're going to be applying for? And I think that a candidate would be wise to take account of themselves and find out or do an internal review and say, well, what experiences have I had out there, and how do those experiences relate to the world of business?
But I've read and heard that many times the person who's conducting the interview makes a decision about a candidate in a very short period of time.
Well, that's true. The Society for Human Resources Management indicates that hiring decisions are made in the first 4.5 minutes.
That is amazing to me.
Well, absolutely. It's human nature, though. We have a tendency to jump real quick to a conclusion. It's important, then, for the candidate to manage their impression that they're making on the recruiter. In other words, obviously, you want to dress right, you want to act right, you want to communicate well, so that you make that good initial impression on the recruiter or hiring manager.
What if you have your first interview is a phone interview or something other than a face-to-face? What advice do you have for folks to get the face-to-face interview?
One of the best techniques to use is put a mirror in front of the telephone and look at the mirror and smile, because that smile will transfer itself through the telephone to the recruiter, and that can help get you that second interview.
And then after that interview, whether it be the phone interview or the face-to-face, do you still recommend the old-fashioned head notes, or is email thank you note good enough? What do you recommend as a follow-up?
It's just important to follow up. I think that a nice business letter format is good, but for the speed that recruiters are going through today, an email is just appropriate. Watch your language, watch your punctuation and so forth, and make sure that it's correct.
Folks would like to get in touch with you. Your contact information is?
Yes, they can get in touch with me at the Spittler Group or spittlergroup.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. We are delighted to have as our guest today Mike Michael. Mike is the president and CEO of Fifth Third Bank here in the Greater Cincinnati region, which really expands to a lot more than just the Greater Cincinnati area.
We go from Lima, down well into northern Kentucky. We cover the entire trade area of this broadcast.
You have not always been at Fifth Third, but yet you started your career in banking while you were still in school.
Yeah, I started in my sophomore year as I somehow, for some reason, knew that I wanted to be in the banking business. What a tortured existence. And I started as a teller at the Stanford campus branch of Wells Fargo Bank, one of the best jobs I ever had. Probably met every student on campus at some point.
So you started in college, and you've worked your way up. Certainly, you clearly are now, like I mentioned, the president and CEO of Fifth Third. You've been presidents of other banks, yeah. Big banks, too, here in our region that are located here in our region, but not headquartered here in our region.
That's right, and that's a real difference. It was what brought me back into the industry that I found so alluring. We have, of our almost 22,000 employees, 7,000 of them are based here in the greater Cincinnati area. And that's a wonderful thing because our people are so actively involved in the community. Hundreds of thousands of hours that they give to various community causes, but also the combined efforts of our employees, our company, and foundations that we manage gave away in 2011, invested $8 million in various organizations, over 200 organizations in our community. We're very proud of that. And
as you should be.
Well, that's the sort of thing that a headquarters bank can do, I think. I was stunned one day, before I joined Fifth Third, when I was walking through Fountain Square around lunchtime, and looked at the number of people wearing Fifth Third pins who walked out and went into the stores and into the restaurants, and just how much Fifth Third means to the vibrance of downtown Cincinnati, let alone Dayton and the other communities, northern Kentucky, the other communities where we do business. It's a big deal, and it means a lot to those 7,000 people and the other 22,000 around the country.
Do you feel a heightened level of responsibility being the local head of that organization?
I sure do. Yeah, it's my job to do whatever I can to make sure that the company is advancing the cause of the community, and I'm thrilled to do it. And I have great support from all those people, and also from our parent company, which of course is located right here.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner,
and I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mike Michael. Mike is the president and CEO of Fifth Third Bank of Greater Cincinnati. And technology has affected virtually every business, and certainly banking has long been affected by technology, from a processing standpoint, and really a lot from a consumer standpoint. What are some of the new things that technology has enabled you to reach out to your customers with?
Technology, as you were asking the question, I was thinking back to my days when I started as a teller in the Stanford campus branch at Wells Fargo Bank. At a walk-up window, and not that many years ago, I took my wife out to show her where I started my career, and it had been replaced by a machine. And I recall, too, that there used to have to be a bank on every corner because the technology was such that we couldn't communicate as rapidly as you can today, and the consumer was limited to whatever hours the bank's open. Now we see advancing technology. For instance, we have introduced recently mobile banking. Just recently, also, we developed what we call the Fifth Third Duo Card, which grew out of listening to our customers, the curiosity thing, who told us, I'm tired of carrying a debit card for my ATM and a credit card. Why can't I do it all in one? Good idea. So we created that for them. We created for our retail customers what we call the cash recycler, which gives those customers the ability through a machine that we house in their particular place of business to bank their cash right there on site and get credit into their account, and you don't have to deal with couriers and the potential for crime. So technology gives you the ability to do all those things and more.
Well, it's neat because it's technology that allows your customers to save money.
Exactly. Yeah, that the cost of doing business with mm-hmm. a bank has declined.
And time. That's
right.
A big deal.
And you can bank, of course, through the web or through your smartphone 24/7.
Yeah, I want to switch gears just a little bit because another initiative and something that certainly is our passion, I know your bank has embraced this as well, is a whole concept of financial education. You've joined in partnership with...
With Dave Ramsey, for one.
To go into the schools and help children learn financial education, basic
right.
financial skills, which are so badly needed in our society.
Yeah, it's really very, very important, and it's the part of responsibility that we think is so important around education, to prepare our young people for the world that they're about to graduate
do you,
into.
Do you feel like that's you're seeing results from that? Do you feel you're getting a lot of positive feedback and so forth?
Yeah, we think so. A lot of it will depend on how the particular teachers mm-hmm. introduce the curriculum. But there's been a lot of traction at a number of schools, and we're very pleased with that.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.